This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at EmpowerRadio.com. Today, we're going to be talking all about one of my favorite topics, love. You know, love, soul, bliss, and joy, it kind of all goes together. My guest today, Linda Carroll, really believes that there are cycles to love. She's got an awesome new book out called Love Cycles, but she's done a lot of work on relationships in general, something called Imago Therapy, which we'll definitely talk about during the show. But, you know, it does make sense. There's cycles to everything under the sun. So why wouldn't our love go through cycles as well? And hopefully today we'll have a little bit of clarity on how to kind of go from romantic love and build love that lasts for a lifetime. So welcome to Soulful Living, Linda.
Hi.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here. One thing that I really found interesting about your work, and I mentioned in the topic, was Imago Therapy. But before we jump into that, can you give the listeners a little bit of history about you? You are a certified transpersonal psychology. What is that?
Transpersonal is a what's sort of the intersection between the personal, which is your own story, and how it fits into the bigger world. It's kind of an intersection between spirituality and psychology. That beyond the ideas transpersonal, beyond the personal, there is something more. There's certainly you talk about this all the time when you talk about soulful living, that would be a transpersonal description, is that we're more than our story, that we fit into something else. And words like archetype and like higher power and soulful life, all of those kinds of words are transpersonal words. So it just
that
means
that
there's another dimension.
That gave me goosebumps from head to toe.
What?
I said, that gave me goosebumps from head to toe.
It did. It means that there's another dimension to what a lot of psychology historically has looked at people as. So it's a very big field. Lots of, you know, Joseph Campbell and, I mean, so many people who are out there now who write are certainly transpersonal psychologists or transpersonal therapists or transpersonal radio people.
How you described it as being kind of outside of yourself and another dimension of who you are, not necessarily another dimension like Star Trek, but, you know, kind of like a something besides what everybody sees on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And what we see sometimes, because we forget who we are, and we get lost in all kinds of stories in our lives, and we have to remember who we are again and again, which is what I think part of the couple's journey is really about, is remembering our true self or our real self, and that's a journey two people take for a time.
And isn't that really, to me, isn't that really what a relationship is about? You know, two people healing as individuals, but yet coming together to heal within the relationship itself.
Yes, that's right. I think that's right. I think that's true. And you know, healing takes a lot of forms. And so, you know, everybody. And I think another part of what I write about in Love Cycles, my book, is the idea that everyone can win at love, and that you might not end up in the relationship that you've started in, but it doesn't mean you can't win at love. You can win at love if it means you find yourself, and if it means that you have some kind of resolution within yourself to how you got into a relationship that wasn't able to meet you or to stay with you. So, you know, so often relationship books have this theme that if you don't end up with the person that you are with, that you some somehow have failed and you don't get the prize. And in Love Cycles, I say anybody can get the prize, because the prize is really learning how to be wholehearted, and it's really learning how to come home to ourselves. And it's wonderful if you can, if you've chosen someone in the beginning who is appropriate for you, who can kind of go the distance. But we don't all do that. And so sometimes healing means we have to leave a relationship as well as being able to stay in it.
Absolutely. Okay, so listeners, a lot of listeners that are with me, I regularly know that I've been married 3 times. My husband, he and I now have been together for 13 years. But when I left my second marriage, I thought I failed. And I remember going into counseling and saying, okay, look, I don't need you to look back at my history and figure, you know, I don't want to lay on your couch and tell you my story, because it's a story. I need to rewrite a new chapter. I need to learn why I'm going through these cycles and why I'm, you know, finding myself in these relationships that weren't working. And he said, you need to heal yourself, which to me was like an aha moment. And I had done some work on with Harville Hendrix and getting the love you want and that kind of thing, but it really didn't dawn on me until that moment. So when I read about your work, I thought, yeah, here's somebody who is addressing that first and foremost, that you need to heal yourself. And that's really the core of what I got from Love Cycles, is that it's about healing yourself.
But don't you think, I mean, the part of the Harville Hendrix work is that when we fall in love with our unfinished business, if we don't know what our unfinished business is, then what happens is we keep recreating the story over and over. And so if you grow up where there's not a lot of healthy attachment, either modeled or interacted, if you don't have a lot of healthy attachment with your parents, with one or two of them, or siblings, and if that's not part of what you learn, then what happens is you feel like the falling in love process is what love is, because
right.
You don't have something else to measure it against. And when it gets into hard times, if when you were a kid, hard times meant that people fell apart, or relationships dissolved, or you got punished, then what happens when hard times come in a relationship, which they always do, those are cycles, we go to what we learned, and we say, uh-oh, relationship's over, or this isn't love. And mm-hmm. So I think that we have to understand our history enough to be able to see where we recreate it, because we will recreate it over and over again. And so the understanding is what gives us the freedom to be able to dump it, at least the part that we don't want.
Absolutely. And in the relationship that I have with my husband now, he has 3 children. I have 2 children. And it took a little bit of transition, which I'm sure you can understand. But I remember having a conversation with my daughter at one point saying, This is the type of relationship, obviously my husband and I are not perfect, but that couples strive for, because we are modeling being healthy in ourselves.
Yes.
And healing the wounds from the past, but yet recognizing that it's not just that romantic love, you know, that there are cycles to it. And let's kind of talk about that. What are the cycles of love?
Let me just say, first of all, about the Harville Hendrix piece, that that's one of the wonderful things that Imago Therapy teaches us, is that if we're with someone who's willing to do the work, we can heal those wounds together. We can learn healthy. If you didn't learn healthy attachment, it doesn't mean you're doomed, but it means you need to find a partner who is willing to do the work with you. And you can learn what healthy attachment is together. And that's really so hopeful. But sometimes we choose somebody who isn't willing to, or who's so caught up in themselves and they're so self-centered, they can't really make space for another person. So the Imago Therapy really says that this is a path of healing, but 2 people have to do it. So go ahead and ask your question again, Terry. I just wanted to say that.
No, thank you. I'm glad you did say that. It's important. It was very important to have that message out there that the most successful relationships are when both people are willing to heal within the relationship or willing to work at it. I like what you said about sometimes people are so self-centered, you know, that they're not really into the relationship. They're more into themselves, I guess, right? And what they're getting out of it.
That's right. And so, you know, if for instance, if you think about a relationship, if there's a circle and there's 50% is room for one person and 50% is room for another. Well, if you grew up in such a way that there was never room for you and somebody in the family took up all the space and you took up 10%, then what kind of a person are you going to find? Someone who takes up 90%. So that's part of the learning of how you can grow bigger, how you can know that you're entitled to more care, attention, someone to have your back. But when we fall in love, none of that matters. When we fall in love, you know what I think? The first stage, which I call the merge, where it's we two are one, I think that part of that stage is that we actually see the best of the other person. We see their possibility. And not only that, we see the possibility of ourselves. We're so generous and expansive and non-holding of grudges. And, you know, there's a lot of chemicals that are present in the chemical systems of people who are in the new stages of love, and their brains change, too. And those chemicals cause us to be expansive. We want to make love. People who don't think about sex or who have low libidos become very sexual and amorous, and people who are closed and defensive become very vulnerable and open. So you have this first part of relationship, which is full of sexuality and intimacy and vulnerability, and you're seeing the best of each other. And then what happens is that time passes, the chemicals wear off, they only last 3 years at the most, and we're back to our normal way of being in the world. And life comes in and it brings stress, which, of course, it does. And without those chemicals, we start to react in the way we always have. People shut down. They shut down their vulnerability. They become defensive. We notice that what we once admired begins to irritate us. Our affection, everyone in the first stage is all unconditional. We found our other half. It's all unconditional. And what we see are the ways we're the same. But in the second stage, we begin to notice the ways that we're different.
And what do you call that second stage?
Doubt and denial. And I call it doubt and denial because first we start to doubt that this is really the perfect person for us. And then we deny that stage. We say, no, I don't want to give it up. And so we have this attachment to not let it change, and we start to push things under the rug because this idea of a perfect relationship, it's so much a part of our culture. It's so much a part of what we yearn for. I certainly grew up in the Disney culture, and I thought there'd be some perfect person there who would just sort of love me out of all of my human troubles, out of the human condition.
The knight in shining armor to scoop you up and take you away.
And to take me away from myself, really, you know, that
the same
things that trouble me now would trouble me as a kid. I mean, I think we just get better and better at handling ourselves, and we grow bigger space around the better part of us, but those same things are in us through our whole life. And so so we deny it, but the power struggle begins, and we feel less vulnerable, and we start to get more defensive. So now there's new chemicals in our body, which are the chemicals of fight or flight.
Mm-hmm. So first, That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, there's just openness and wonderfulness, and then there's fight and flight. Now, one of the things about this is that people always ask me, can you get from the merge to stage five, wholehearted love, fast? And I think you can not get through it fast, but you can get through it without tremendous anguish if you know the skills. Because falling in love it's a sentiment, it's a feeling, and wholehearted love is a skill set. But we go after.
So is that chapter three?
Three is disillusionment. I call it the frozen wall. We have repetitive arguments, infinity loops, the same argument over and over. all roads lead to this trouble. And just like in stage one where we saw the best, we see the worst. Everything in stage one in the merge supported our idea this is a perfect person. Everything in stage three, disillusionment, supports our idea that this is impossible. This person is impossible. And we argue about the same things. And we become closed off, and this is where depression comes in, or anxiety increases. Affairs happen. People can do a lot of damage in these stages. And, you know, one of the things I say is these are like the winter. They're the winter seasons. We don't have to create damage in them if we can just allow them. We can get through them without doing a lot of harm, but we have to understand that they're natural. Stage four is the decision. A decision to do something, or actually, you know, some people make a decision to not do something. I don't want to look. I don't want to think. I don't want to pay attention to this. I'm just going to say everything's fine, and I'm going to sweep everything under the rug. Or we say I'm out of here. You know,
right. That's saying that sometimes making no decision is making a decision.
It's absolutely to not make a decision is definitely making a decision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and what's going to happen is it's going to be out of our hands at some point. If we don't make a decision, then the relationship is just going to end up sort of exploding or going into indifference, and we're allowing it. But it's so scary to look at. And if you don't have the skills, again, I was just reading something online this morning about what to do when you have a repetitive argument. And the person who was writing it said, you have to talk about it. If you have a repetitive argument, you have to talk about it. Bring it to your partner. And, you know, I read that and I thought, wait a minute, there's something missing in this article. First, you have to learn the skills to bring it to your partner and the skills to hear it. This is where we really need skills, because if I'm upset with my partner, there's so many different ways I can say it to him. And if he has to hear my protest, there's so many ways he can hear it. He can get very defensive. He can push back and say, what's wrong with me? Or if he knows the skills, he knows how to listen and how not to make it so personal, not how to be so reactive. There are skills, and they're really, really essential to know how to get to wholehearted.
I agree 100%. I can't tell you how many times, especially in the beginning stages of my relationship with my husband, that I've thought to myself, okay, I need to learn how to say this so that, number one, he understands what I'm trying to say. And it's me, you know, saying this. And also, how to say it in a way that's not going to, you know, push his buttons or make him feel like I'm insulting him or trying to, you know, be manipulative or anything like that. Learning how to express yourself in a way that honors the relationship certainly a skill that needs mastered.
That's exactly right. Not only that, but learning how to hear your partner in a way that doesn't get you defensive is the same skill on the other side.
And he's attacking me or whatever, you know, that however he says it doesn't seem like it's a threat to me.
That's right. So how can we develop, for instance, one of the things I teach in my classes is how to develop curiosity instead of reactivity. So if my partner comes in and says, I'm so upset at how you didn't celebrate my birthday, but I had done everything I knew to do. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting defensive and saying, but look at all I did for you, if we can develop curiosity and say, I'm so interested in what you feel, what's going on? I don't understand. I have a friend recently, this is not just true of love, it's true in all of our relationships. I have a friend recently that went through a divorce and I did everything I knew how to do to support her. And recently in a conversation, she said, you know, I really felt like you didn't have my back. And my first reaction, I could feel it, was defensive. How could you say that? Look at all I did. But, you know, I caught myself and I said to her, I'd really like to hear what it was like for you and how you felt like I didn't have your back. How could I have done it differently? Mm-hmm. And really what she talked about was her own feelings. And I don't know that anybody, I probably could have done better because I was doing all the things I thought she wanted and I didn't ask her what it was she needed. So that was one thing I learned from that. But I think also because I was willing to hear her, at some point she said, you know, I don't know that you could have done much differently. But if I had defended myself, we never would have gotten to that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You would have ended up probably arguing, but instead you were curious, like you said, and you opened it up to hear her and all hear how she was feeling, but also learn possibly what could have made a difference. Although she said she, you know, didn't really know that anything could have made a difference, you opened it up to the possibility that it could have. And it's interesting because I wrote about this in a magazine a couple of weeks ago that we tend to look at relationship work with our significant other, and we don't necessarily extend it out to the friendships in our lives. I had a client who mentioned that to me. He had some questions about, you know, this person doesn't really even show up as a friend. What can I do about that? And I love that you can take the work of life, love cycles and incorporate them into every relationship in your
Everything.
Life, not just your significant
Absolutely.
Other partner.
Absolutely. You know, our siblings, our parents, our, the people we work with, that it's true for, and it's often friendships with women. That's, I'm doing a whole workshop on for women on friendship on Friday. You know, that's a complicated thing because women, we do the merge really well with each other. You know, we find out all the ways we're alike, we support each other. But when we start to get into an area of some kind of difficulty, which all relationships do, I think that we really, women generally, have trouble with conflict with each other because our idea of relationships is not about conflict. It's about support. So when inevitable conflict happens, what do? Again, we need the skills to get to wholehearted. I have some friends that I've had since I was 12 years old, and we've had some rough moments and times and years. And I see them. I still have three friends from age 12, and we now can laugh about those times and be, you know, I have a friend, we were in love with the same boy for years, with some hard moves, I'll tell you. And we can laugh about that now, all these decades later, because we were resilient. We overcame the difficulties, and we now have, that's where we get trust. And in our love relationships, trust really comes, wholehearted love really comes when we've weathered the winters and we've weathered the storms and we have trust that we will be able to come through it together. I mean, I know that no matter how hard it gets, because I have a lot of decades with my husband, however impossible it gets, we have so much history in being able to work through the trouble that I don't fear it anymore. Mm-hmm. We know how to go into it and do it. But, you know, one of the things about that I think that's important about wholehearted love is that I don't believe we change a lot of our problems. You know, the research shows that couples have about 10 irresolvable issues. And those issues, they don't go away. They don't get better. We just get better at how to handle them. You know, I mean, this sounds sort of dumb, but my husband and I started our relationship 40 years ago. We were married to other people, and he walked into the kitchen where I was doing the dishes, and he said, "You're doing that totally wrong." That was our first.
That sounds like my husband.
It was the beginning. Well, do you know we had that argument yesterday?
Only, oh, is that funny?
I really believe he's doing the dishes wrong, but he really believes I do them wrong, and we still argue about it, but the arguments, now we can laugh at them. We can say, "I can't believe this. You'll never get it," and then we'll laugh.
And
there were some hard moves about this for a long time because, as Imago Therapy teaches us, those arguments are not really about dishes. They're about respecting how I am, hearing me, knowing that we're different, and that's just one place we've never resolved, and we probably never will.
Well, Linda, this has been awesome. Listeners, I'm chatting with Linda Carroll today, and you can find all of Linda's information on the Soulful Living page here at EmpowerRadio.com. Linda, when we talked before the show, I said it goes by super fast, and guess what? We are totally down to the wire. It goes by super fast.
It sure does.
Yes, well, and I want to say thank you to Dylan, my producer, for showing up and making this happen for us today. And Linda, I want to just ask real quick, I love for my guests to leave the listeners with one thought they can take out into the day to expand their soul. Hey, expand their love life, right? What would that be for you?
It would be to start paying attention to what the people you love do right and to let them know, to let them know that you appreciate them right now. Say something that you appreciate about the person you care about the most. It doesn't take away what's wrong, but to add to what's right. And that can change everything.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here with me today and sharing your work.
You're welcome. Thank you.